back, everybody, to another edition of 18 in Life, the Pac-12 Hoops Podcast. My name is Jeff Neusser. I'm from KookCenter.com. That's my main site, but we'll talk about some of the other places where you can find my work here in a sec. But I am joined by my esteemed co-host, Seth Colin. Seth, is it taking you as long to get used to Pac-12 as it's taking me? Because I was so used to saying Pac-10 for the last 2 years.
Yeah, thank God that Google has their sort of predictive text or whatever, because I'm always typing in Pac-10, the scores, Pac-10 schedule, Pac-10 everything. But thankfully, it knows what I'm talking about. So that's under control, and I keep saying Pac-10. But I don't know. I mean, I'll be one of those like people like 20 years from now who's like Pac-10. They'll be like, Grandpa, what's wrong with you? I'm sure there's people that say Pac-8 somewhere, but
yeah. Yeah, it's it's funny as I've gotten used to writing it. It's now when I need to type Pac-10, because I'm writing about something from last year or whatever. Mm-hmm. Then it's all of a sudden I type in Pac-12 and because my fingers have been trained, and it's like, oh, wait a minute, Pac-10. So anyway, hey, my name's Jeff. If you've never listened to the show before, I am a writer at KookCenter.com. I cover the Washington State University Cougars for that SB Nation site. I also am the sole author and proprietor of Cougar Sports Weekly, founded CougarSportsWeekly.com, which is sort of a weekly newsletter. And one of the things that I think sort of makes this podcast sort of cool is that Seth and I come from sort of different angles at basketball. I mean, we're both huge basketball fans. We both just enjoy watching the game to a great degree. But we sort of come at basketball a little bit from different angles. I take more of a statistical analysis approach in terms of sort of analyzing performance and predicting performance beyond just sort of what my eyes are telling me. And one of the ways that I've been involved in doing that sort of is I was one of the contributing authors to College Basketball Prospectus 2011-2012 this year, which was a very cool thing. I wrote the Western Athletic Conference and the Mountain West Conference previews, and so that's sort of an angle to mine. And by the way, I'll just go ahead and plug the book. If you want to buy it in PDF form, it's under $10. It makes a wonderful Thanksgiving/Christmas gift for all of your college basketball fans. You can find that at basketballperspectus.com. Okay, that's done. Seth, why don't you go ahead and talk a little bit about sort of your background and sort of how we complement each other's styles a little bit.
Oh, gosh. Well, I mean, I write for the Sunbreak.com. It's sort of more of a general site. I've always been sort of more of someone who just kind of watches everything and pays maybe less attention to statistics, although I do pay attention to statistics, and I like statistics, and I like the advanced statistical analysis in College Basketball Prospectus. But I don't know. I guess I've got my eyes kind of all over the place, maybe more. I don't know. That didn't make any sense at all. But we'll see. Just listen to the show, and you'll see that there's like sort of difference. Also, I'm a Husky fan, and Jeff's a big Cougar fan. So we've got those two bases covered.
Yes, and that always makes for an interesting dynamic, because most of the time when we jump on, at least this time of the season, Seth gets to talk about how the Huskies are winning at football, and I usually get to talk about how our football team is getting obliterated. And that is not the case today after Saturday. I'm sorry for all of you Arizona State fans out there. Sorry to have ruined your year, but frankly, I don't care, because we've been losing so much for like 4 years that I'm still a little bit – here I am on Monday morning, still a little bit in shock to some degree over what exactly happened on Saturday night. But you didn't come here for football. You came here for basketball. And so, Seth, here's where I'm sort of thinking we'll start off maybe we'll spend today, just sort of talking about, how we see the conference race shaping up, who we sort of think might be the better teams and who might surprise and those sorts of things. And maybe talk a little bit about the schedule this week and which games are maybe some of the bigger games and more interesting games. It seems to me in sort of looking at the race, and I don't know if you sort of have this same conclusion too, but it seems to me there's sort of a clear demarcation in terms of who we sort of believe in. Obviously it's very early in the season and we don't know exactly how people are going to perform and, whatever. But it seems to me there looks like a pretty clear demarcation between sort of the teams that have the ability to win the conference and sort of there's maybe a little bit of a small sort of middle class and then a whole bunch of teams that I don't think either one of us think have much of a chance of winning the conference. Is that sort of the way you see it, just sort of heading into the season?
Well, yeah, I mean, I think and the Pac-10 media poll also sort of showed that, like, only three teams got basically almost evenly split the first place votes. UCLA, Cal, and Arizona, and nobody else got any. I mean, I would, and again, I just mentioned Husky fans, my Husky fandom coming through, but I think you'd probably throw Washington into that mix. Yeah, I mean, other than that, it's sort of, you know, Oregon looked fairly good against Vanderbilt, and they've brought in a lot of JC talent, so they might be able to throw something together, but I'm not sure about that. So I kind of feel like those are the four teams, and then there's kind of a some bad teams at the bottom. I mean, Wazoo having lost a lot of talent. Utah looks really, really atrocious. And Colorado also lost, like, practically their whole roster. So yeah, I think that's – there's sort of like a kind of a clear beginning, middle, and end.
Yeah, it's, you know, Cal, Arizona, Washington. UCLA, I think, was put up in that area, but there's a little bit of a – people wonder a little bit about them after the early season loss to Loyola Marymount, which I did happen to actually watch all of. And I got to say, I am not as maybe sky is falling with UCLA as maybe a lot of people are. At least, and maybe that's because my expectations weren't maybe as high as some other people's, because I know that, you know, UCLA coming into the season ranked, I think, 17th or something like that in the AP poll. And, you know, obviously there's some expectation there, but for me, that seemed more like, again, as the media are sort of want to do, more of a nod to UCLA's history, tradition, and the kind of coach they think Ben Howland is, more than what was actually coming back. Because, you know, as I watched that game, you know, one of the things I tweeted after that game was, you know, UCLA, they are who we thought they were, you know, doing my best sort of Dennis Green thing, because it's, you know, the biggest issue was they got literally almost nothing from their guards. And, you know, the Ware twins looked fantastic. The hardest part for me is going to be keeping them straight in my head, because I'm just like, okay, now which one was it that made that great, you know, put it on the floor, and which one was it that, you know, made that great rebound, because they seem to sort of have slightly different, you know, skill sets. But, you know, it's UCLA, their front line was great and their guards were terrible, and their guards weren't very good, not just on offense, but on defense either. Loyola Marymount sort of had a crazy good shooting game. But, you know, as I sort of dug deeper into the stats, you know, I one thing I noticed was that UCLA really dominated the paint area, which is sort of what we expected. You know, that's what they're supposed to do. And so they, you know, they really shut down, you know, to Loyola Marymount's 2-point percentage, you know, really had a high 2-point percentage of their own. And, you know, Loyola Marymount just happened to shoot, you know, 66% from 3-point range. So I think it's, I don't know, it's, I didn't see anything in that game that made me think significantly less. It just made me think, okay, yeah, they've, you know, they've got some work to do at guard, okay. You know, I don't know.
I mean, they were missing Jeremy Anderson, who,
right,
suspended for two games, who's now going to be back. He was suspended for two games. You know, and then Tyler Honeycutt, who left and went into the draft, so he would have been somebody who might have helped, at least from the perimeter a little bit, and just from, you know, being a half-decent guard. We should explain that the Ware twins are these two kids who are 6'10", who played at North Carolina for a year, then sat out, came, and now transferred to UCLA. They're both 6'10". David, especially, can shoot from outside, so you know, they're going to play David at small forward. So they're going to have a 6'10 small forward. They're going to have Josh Smith, who's 7 feet in the middle. And they're going to have Reeves Nelson, who's probably 6'8", but plays a little bit bigger. I guess he's the four. So that's, I mean, that's an NBA front line height wise anyway. And probably more than that from small forward. But again, yeah, they don't, Lazarus Jones at point guard, he was 1 for 11 from the field, and the one basket he got was like kind of a fluky one anyway, where he dribbled the ball off a guy and then it came back to him and he laid it in. And they just, you know, their guards are just bad. They're just bad. And I don't know. I think I don't know what's going on there, because it was weird to me that Honeycutt and oh God, I'm spacing on the other guy left, Malcolm Lee, you know, they weren't really NBA prospects, and they went into the draft and, you know, got drafted in the second round. I mean, they really both had growth to do, and yet they left anyway. And then, you know, Jeremy Anderson stealing a laptop, and he's only suspended for two games, which is, it just seems like Howland doesn't really seem to have control of that program, maybe the way he possibly should. I don't know. They don't, I mean, I can't, it's just, I think a better coach probably would have had a little more sway, or maybe not a better coach, but a coach with more in control of the program would have had more sway over, you know, two of his top players just bailing for no really good reason. I mean, it's one thing for a guy like Isaiah Thomas to leave where, you know, he's pretty much done everything he can do. It's not like he's going to improve his value in the scouts' eyes, but for two guys like that to leave, it's just like Hallen says something like, you know, these guys get a lot of input from all kinds of people, and it's like, well, I don't know. I mean, aren't you their head college basketball coach? I mean, shouldn't they be listening a little bit to you? I don't know. Maybe I'm being naive, but it's just kind of everything that's going on with UCLA. It just doesn't seem like he's quite got a firm hand on the rudder anymore.
Yeah, I think that's fair. And I, you know, it's there's a part of me that thinks that, you know, on some level, maybe Hallen was caught a little flat footed on that one. And, you know, maybe not expecting those guys to go. I don't remember exactly where Honeycutt went. Didn't he go pretty much about the end of the first round? I think.
Yeah.
So, I mean, for him, it wasn't, it wasn't a horrible decision, but Malcolm Lee was sort of like, what, you know, that was a head scratcher. And so, you know, I know that Hallen's got an incredibly highly rated class coming in next year, that, you know, should be arriving on campus. And so that, I know that's, and some guards in there. So I know that they're sort of looking forward to that. I, you know, one thing I didn't think of, you know, as I was sort of, I did my sort of preseason predictions at Coug Center on, you know, just sort of threw together who I thought my top 10 teams were and threw them in order. And one of the things I did was I put UCLA second. And, you know, and after watching that game, one of the things I don't think I valued, highly enough is the fact that they're not going to play any games at Pauley Pavilion this year. It's going to be kind of a UCLA traveling road show.
And they're calling it the UCLA road show. That's like what they're calling it for ticket sales. But yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, so they play their first game against Loyola Marymount in the sports arena, which is literally across the street from USC.
Yeah.
Just so anyway, so they, you know, and it just, I mean, the environment was incredibly stale, and not like the environment at Pauley is all that great in some of those early season, you know, some of those early season matchups. I think I just remember watching some games there the last couple of years on TV and just thinking like, I know it's non-conference, but you know, can you be bothered to come to a game? But anyway, it's, you know, it was really, really sterile. And I wonder how much that's going to, you know, the student section, there were barely any students there. I wonder how much that's going to affect them, going forward.
Yeah. I mean, I think, you know, it's always weird when you're not in your home arena. I mean, most Pac-10 teams practice and play in the same arena, so that theoretically gives them some sort of advantage. But also, yeah, I mean, just Pauley Pavilion's on campus, so there's just going to be if you're playing it, and they're going to play some games, they're going to play 6 games in Anaheim, in Anaheim, so that's way far away. So you know, yeah, the student section it's just going to be less and less loud and less likely to impact the refereeing. And therefore, you know, they're just going to, you might as well just kind of knock 2 points off of UCLA's score every game that they play this year. I feel like 2-4, maybe 5-6, something like that. And you know, against LMU, LMU's in LA also. I imagine there was a fair number of LMU fans there as well. So, yeah, that's going to be a big difference for them as well this year, I think.
So we sort of agree that the other three
teams – Oh, I should make one other point.
Yeah, go ahead.
One other point about UCLA. The other thing that's sort of going against them this year is that the unbalanced schedule this year that everyone has.
Yes.
And they're the one team that misses Colorado and Utah on the road, which are going to be the two easiest road games. So that, you know, potentially could come into play down the road.
Yeah, that's going to be an interesting thing. I actually did write about that as well, that, you know, and I did not look that closely at everybody's schedule to know sort of who only gets Utah and Colorado one time. I know Washington State is one of them. You know, I looked at the Cougs. So,
right.
But yeah, but that's going to be something to sort of watch as the season unfolds, definitely. So the other three teams that we sort of agree are in that, you know, could win the conference, maybe echelon, Cal, Arizona, Washington. Which of those three teams would you sort of project at this point as being the team that you would sort of say, all right, this is the team that I expect to maybe come out on top at this point looking forward?
Gosh, I don't know.
And it's Cal, okay to be a homer. It's okay.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, there's problems with all three of those teams. It's tough for me to say. I really think between those four, it's going to be probably one of them will just come on at late season. I'm not sure who that is. Cal, you know, everyone's picked Cal, and I just don't. it, you know, I mean, they were okay last year. They were like decent, but, you know, all those four guys, all those main guys that made him kind of half decent are back. It's not like they've got anybody better. And it just sort of reminds me of Arizona State last year, which, you know, had a lot of guys back, and then everyone thought they were going to be good. And then, you know, they lost a couple of guys, and then they just went completely in the tank because they had some injuries and things. But you know, again, I could be completely wrong because Alan Crabb looked really, really good on – I mean, like, he's ready to take the leap or something like that on in their opener against George Washington. So, yeah, I mean, then, you know, you go to Arizona who, you know, lost kind of Mr. Everything and Derek Williams. But, you know, they have some good players back, and especially they, you know, their point guard situation is a little messy because Momo Jones left, but then they have Jordan May looked really good in there against Duquesne. He was like their one player that really came out really hot in the second half and scored a bunch of points. And they also have Nick Johnson, the freshman, who looks just ready to play Pac-10 basketball or Pac. There you go. There's the first one. We should add $5 to a pot. they have some guys coming in, and then Washington, you know, loses Isaiah Thomas and Justin Holiday and Matthew Bryan Amney, who are their floor leaders and their top scorers and their top defenders and everything. But they bring in a couple of talented players, especially Tony Roten, who's, you know, one of the top recruits in the country. So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's just going to be a really interesting year to see how everything shakes out. I mean, it's not the top level of, you know, it's not the Pac-10 of 3 or 4 years ago where you had all these NBA, you know, players. But I think it's going to be really interesting to see how it develops because you got those four teams, which I think are pretty evenly matched up at the top. And so I'm not going to answer your question to say who do I think is going to win because I just haven't even formed an opinion about that.
Well, that's no fun.
I know it's not fun, but I'm just not going to do it. I just refuse.
You won't play my game. All right. Well, I will say honestly at this point, if I'm handicapping so, it, you know, like yeah. I think okay, that's sort of where pick. If I had to pick,
right. Okay.
my early season have to pick is if I had to pick would be Cal, and I know okay. that sort of. The idea is that there's nothing, I guess, super sexy about, you know, they didn't bring anybody, you know, major in, although they did get, you know, a Minnesota transfer, Justin Cobbs eligible, who has, you know, been a sort of a nice player off the bench for them, averaging 10 points a game in their first two contests. And so, you know, I sort of look at, okay, you know, they are, I think, the most well-rounded team mm-hmm. in the conference. I think they have, you know, they get the best guard play. I think maybe outside of Washington, I don't know, you could probably put those sort of side by side depending on which Tony Roten you get, the one that, you know, wants to throw the ball, you know, 10 rows into the stands trying to make the flashy pass, or the one who, you know, wants to, you know, sort of play sort of as a sort of like controlled chaos, I guess, you know. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. But, you know, I think with Alan Crabb, I think there's a good chance that Cal has the best player in the conference. I really think that there's a chance that that's the case. And Jorge Gutierrez, who is, you know, obviously was probably over the second half of the season last year, the best player maybe outside of Derek Williams, Isaiah Thomas, and Klay Thompson. And so, and all three of those guys obviously are gone. And so, you know, I think that with that 1-2 punch, there's a decent chance that they may have sort of the best 1-2 punch in the conference. And then they've got, you know, Harper Camp, as long as his knees hold up, you know, he's solid. Richard Solomon, really like him as a young player. And so, you know, I think they have a sort of a nice, well-rounded, experienced roster, which, you know, as we've sort of discovered, I think experience does matter in lieu of maybe coming up against a hyper-talented team. And I just don't think there's a hyper-talented team in the conference this year. And so I really like that. And you know, and I like the fact that, you know, that Mike Montgomery is their coach. I think that is something that matters, seeing what he's done the last, you know, the last couple of years down there in Berkeley. Not impressed with Arizona, but again, I feel like that's sort of a, you know, they are who I thought they were kind of thing. You know, they're not, I don't know. I mean, I just sort of figure, I look at teams that have to replace a guy who uses as many possessions as Derek Williams. I mean, he did everything for them. You know, I mean, he was their go-to guy on offense. He was, now he wasn't, a great defender. That was certainly the sort of weak part of his game, but that's not unusual for a guy who uses as many offensive possessions as he did. But, you know, I mean, every possession went through him on offense, and, you know, basically
he shot 60% from three and all this craziness. I mean, I think they have some, you know, decent replacements for, I mean, Carl Natyazko, who was supposed to be actually like, he was projected to be better than Williams, at least when he came to Arizona, but obviously is not. And then they also bring in Angelo Chole, who they kind of competed with Washington to bring in, who is a big man, athletic, and looked pretty good. Like, he's not a stiff, you know, like he can pass, he can do things, actual basketball things. So, you know, yeah, I mean, it's definitely going to be a different team, and I think they lost an exhibition game and they really struggled rebounding, but since then they've been okay. They're not last year's team, but they definitely do have, they have pieces, they have some really talented pieces.
Yeah, I mean, they do, you know, losing Momo Jones, I think, hurt. You know, they're sort of trying to figure some things out at guard. You know, that's obviously, a concern. And then they're just sort of porous in the middle. They're not getting a lot of rebound, not getting a lot of defense. It's really sort of strange. And like I said, I mean, it's not really surprising. And I think if you listened to Sean Miller, which I don't think a lot of people did, you know, he sort of was like, right, hey, right. We're not good.
We're a work in progress,
you know, and I think that, you know, sort of the lost you, Seattle Pacific, for those of you not in the Seattle area who have no idea.
Oh, yes, that's right. I mentioned that. That's crazy.
But SPU, and then, the tenuously, I mean, they weren't really all that close, but they didn't exactly blow the doors off of Valpo, Duquesne, and Ball State. You know, I mean,
they were all close games. All very close games.
Yeah. So, I mean, the good thing is they didn't lose, you know, I mean, so that's good. But at the same time, it's sort of like, okay, yeah, they've got some issues, and we're all sort of aware of that.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, and you know, watching the game, their offense was just they've got to figure it out. They haven't figured it out yet. And again, people underestimate the fact they've had probably like 10 or 12 practices together with the coach since the season started. So, you know, last year where everything was feeded into Derek Williams, I mean, they were just throwing up threes everywhere. You know, they don't really have anybody who can really post up, or they haven't, you know, they don't trust that guy yet. So, something interesting to watch with them also through the season will be, Josiah Turner, who's their big point guard recruit, one of the top guard recruits in the country, who a lot of people thought would step in and play point guard. And Sean Miller was kind of not so optimistic about that. And in fact, Turner didn't even play in the last game against Ball State. He sat the bench the whole time after kind of struggling in the first two games. They'll be kind of using the non-conference season, I think, to just kind of figure things out. And if they, you know, they may have a couple of ugly losses. I mean, they kind of escaped those three games, really. I think they probably could have lost either of those, you know, after losing the exhibition for sure. But I think I feel like they'll get it together by the time conference play starts, and they'll be ready to go. So Washington, yeah?
Yeah.
Okay, I guess let's do that. Yeah, so Huskies lose their top three players, probably by any standard, in Isaiah Thomas and Justin Holiday and Matthew Bryan Amening, but they bring in Tony Roten, who is one of the very few kind of NBA guys you'll see in the Pac-10 that's talked about as a possible NBA player. 6'5", if you haven't seen him play or seen him at all, 6'5", really long arms, incredibly athletic. He played one game in football, caught like 9 passes and had like scholarship offers the next day, except then he tore his ACL playing football, missed his junior year of high school. For my alma mater, Garfield, so I know a lot about him, and has a habit of, is an incredible passer. He has just this arsenal of like behind the head, you know, behind the back. I mean, just crazy passes, which he will kind of try to throw more than he'll actually like, you know, use them just sort of as a, you know, a regular part of his arsenal of playing basketball. He'll just sort of try to throw these passes sometimes, which sometimes works. But they do bring back, you know, Terrence Ross also, who's tremendously talented. Abdul Gaddy, the point guard, is back. after tearing his ACL and being all last year. But front line, similar to Arizona, is kind of a big question because they lose Amening, they lose Holiday. All they have is Aziz Njai, who's huge and a great shot blocker and a great rebounder, but gets in foul trouble and doesn't have much offensive capability. And Darnell Gant, who's a senior but more of a face-up player and not a really good rebounder. So, again, lots of questions for them as well.
Yeah, it's definitely going to be interesting to see how Romar works that out. I think that, you know, I don't think they'll struggle offensively because they just, you know, it seems like Washington never really does. But the issues that, you know, that typically, you know, sort of plague Washington from time to time are sort of defensive and defensive, you know, intensity and things like that. And I think as long as Njai can sort of stay on the floor, I think they'll be okay because you can't underestimate sort of that the importance of that not shot blocker but shot alterer. You know, I don't know if that's if that's actually a word, but that's you can't underestimate that. I mean, I watched Washington State turn from a pretty below average defensive team 2 years ago to a pretty good defensive team last year with a defensive philosophy that just sort of pressured on the perimeter and funneled players to D'Angelo Casto under the basket and just said, okay, you know, just go block shots. And, you know, it really worked out well for them. And so, I think in the college game, if you have somebody who can do that, I think that really makes a difference, especially with, again, you know, Washington really does play a high pressure perimeter game, you know, where they try and force steals and get out on the fast break and things like that. And so if Njai is able to stay on the floor, then, you know, that should be a pretty good defensive unit. I think they will, you know, offensively, they may have nights where they're off in terms of, you know, maybe they don't shoot as well as they could or should. And, you know, that maybe that hurts them, but they just have so many weapons on the perimeter that it's kind of like, you know, if somebody's having a bad night, is it going to be, is there somebody else who can step in? And the answer is probably on most nights going to be yes. You know, it's just a matter of who it is. I am interested to see a little bit of the Roten dynamic, in the sense that, you know, one thing that Romar, I think, has always done a pretty exceptional job of is getting sort of 100% buy-in from everybody. And, you know, he's talked a lot about how, oh, Tony's done everything we've asked of him and, you know, all these things, which is great. You know, I mean, and that's excellent, but I wonder, sometimes, you know, when maybe they play somebody who, you know, tests them as a team a little bit. And, you know, I mean, obviously they were tested a little bit by Florida Atlantic last night for whatever reason. I didn't see the game. But, you know, I just sort of wonder, like, you know, is Roten going to try to, you know, do what he's always done throughout his entire career, which is be the man and take over and just sort of maybe do, you know, force some things and maybe do some ill-advised things? Or is he really buying in and is he, you know, really, you know, sort of committed to team success above everything else? Cause I think that's sort of been Romar's recipe for as long as he's been there.
Yeah, it will be interesting. I mean, Roten didn't really have what you would call strong coaching in high school,
or anywhere,
anywhere. Yeah. I mean that, you know, it's sort of the, you know, idea was just kind of let him go. And I mean, you know, the nice thing is that, like you said, Washington does have guards behind him. It's not like they have to rely on Roten. You know, if he's not doing the job, I'm sure he'll, you know, he'll sit and they have other guys that can step in and do a pretty okay job. I mean, the thing is tricky is some of the things he can do with the ball are so amazing that, you know, you kind of don't want to. I mean, he can create. So against, I guess it was, I can't remember what was the last, which game it was, but one of the first games that he played here with UW, you know, he's taking the ball at the top of the key. He's got a guy, you know, like stationed sort of underneath the basket, like on the, you know, like right next to the post under the basket. And he dribbles to the left and looks off the, you know, the defender in the middle and then whips it with his right hand, I think it was, or his left maybe, either way, behind his head, like, I mean, a laser right to the guy's hands. And I mean, he's got like an easy dunk because he just has to go up and the defender has no idea what happened. I mean, he just makes these passes that you've never seen before. So he will be fun to watch. And I, you know, he can do these pretty incredible things, but, you know, sometimes he'll whip that pass and it goes into the stands and that's not good. One guy I didn't even mention was CJ Wilcox, who has 42 points in the first two games, who's a tremendous outside shooter, and also has shown the ability to put the ball on the floor and score. So, you know, that's another guy. And like you said, yeah, it's going to be, I don't know. It'll be interesting to see how they get noted for their offense because they score, and people say, oh, their defense isn't that good because they give up so many points a game. But it's really more of a pace issue because they play so fast. So they have had a really pretty solid defense like most of the Romar era. But this might be an exception. So you might have games in the hundreds, which would be fun.
Yeah, that'd be fun for fans. Probably not so fun for Romar, but
no, that's true.
So outside of sort of those four teams that we've sort of talked about, is there any other team that you see as potentially surprising and jumping up and challenging, maybe like a Stanford or an Oregon or somebody like that?
Yeah, you know, Stanford, I mean, I don't know, just go through them quickly. I mean, I think Stanford, their front line is so questionable outside of Dwight Powell. I just wonder, you know, I just don't, it's hard for me to see how they're going to compete exactly with some of the other teams in the conference. Oregon had closed the season out really well. Everyone expected them to be terrible last year. They closed the season out. They won the CBI. So exciting. Dana Altman is like totally not messing around. I mean, he's totally bought into this whole, you know, Oregon, we're winning at all costs. I mean, the guys that he brought in, he brings in Tony Woods, who got dismissed from Wake Forest because he pled guilty to assaulting the mother of his child. He's got DeVoe Joseph, who was suspended at Minnesota, who is going to probably play in January. And then they've got a guy from Louisiana Tech, Olu Asho. Actually, I don't know how to say that. Asheolu, who gets it under that loophole where you can play. If you graduated, you can transfer and not miss a year. If you go to a grad program. He's bringing these dudes in, pretty much no matter what to win. They look pretty solid against Vanderbilt, ranked number 7th in the country, and they played them pretty tough. I mean, they were in that game. So I think talent wise, and they have, you know, again, a really nice recruiting class. Jabari Brown comes in, who was rated the number two player in California. Brett Kingma from Washington, who probably did a lot of hype, but he's a great, great outside shooter. I think they're good. I think, you know, Arizona State maybe could bounce back from last year. I mean, they had so many injuries last year. Their outside shooting was awful, awful, awful last year. And if some of those guys have sort of maybe learned to shoot, they might be a little bit better. They should see some improvement from some of those guys. So I feel like that's a team, and I still think Herb Zendik is a pretty good coach, so I think that's somebody that might step up. I guess the only other team I would say maybe is Oregon State, who now has all Craig Robinson's players, and they're going away from that 1-3-1 zone that was so sort of defined them for the last 3 years, and now they're playing man, and they had what did they have? I mean, it wasn't against the greatest team, but Bakersfield, SCSU Bakersfield, they had 19 steals in the first game, even though they're playing man-to-man now. So they have a pretty big front line as well. So I think those are the teams that I think maybe – I don't know. What do you think?
Yeah, I think, Oregon definitely – they impressed me against Vandy. They looked like a team, they sort of had issues with turnovers down the stretch. They looked like a team that's still with a lot of new pieces that's sort of figuring some things out. And, they I think are very deep. I don't think that they are especially, I don't think they have anyone other than outside of maybe Jabari Brown, who's going to really sort of wow you with his individual talent. But he's got, Altman's got sort of this roster that has a lot of 10 very sort of similar looking players in terms not necessarily skill set, but just like in terms of, ability level. I think that's something that can be interesting in terms of what Altman's able to do. I think that was something that he really, planned last year in that, he really sort of used that to his advantage, I think, with what was left behind. Oregon State is a team that, to me, obviously, when you look on paper, there's some talent there. I think that, obviously led by sort of Jared Cunningham. I think that he is, somebody that people look at as could be potentially a breakthrough player. But, if anybody listened to the podcast last year, they would sort of understand that, I'm skeptical of Craig Robinson's coaching ability and, that he, sort of because of that sort of persistence with the 1-3-1 and sort of all of those other things. You know, he, I don't know. I just, I'm not sold. After
he's going away from it now. And I don't know if it was that he feels like, cause I mean, that was sort of his thing. And I don't know if he feels like, you know, now he has the athletes. So now he can play man to man, which he couldn't before. Or if he feels like, well, we can't really compete in the Pac-10, doing that. You know, doing that defense because it was just getting worse and worse and worse, and their defense was just atrocious last year. But you know, he's, and I think probably of any coach in the Pac-10, he's the one, or Pac-12. No, there's number two. he's the one who is sort of like on the hot seat. I would say I don't think there's anyone else in the league who I could envision. Barring some epic collapse or ethical lapse. He's the one coach who I think is sort of, he needs to show some improvement results this year now that he has all his players and everything. We'll see. Basically, you know, going to man is a big change and they seem to have, they definitely have more talent than they definitely, we can say this, they have a lot more talent than they did when he got there. That's for sure.
Yeah.
So he's definitely improved the talent level, but whether or not he can coach that, talent level up, I think remains to be seen. Okay. So those are the sort of in between teams, and now on to the others.
Yeah, I think maybe in the interest of time, we'll just sort of skip over and say, okay, Washington State, Colorado, USC, Utah. Sorry, guys, but
pretty much
not really expecting much. All those teams were either just really bad last year and aren't going to get any better. That would be Utah, or lost some really significant pieces. Washington State obviously loses Clay Thompson, D'Angelo Casto. Colorado loses Alec Burks. USC lost like everyone apparently. And so, they just, whether it was, Vucevic going to the NBA or guys transferring out of the program or guys getting hurt, Gio Fontan, blowing out his knee or whatever. I mean, just
right.
USC sort of, Kevin O'Neill seems to sort of, he seems to sort of like make some of his own problems, but also seems to be the beneficiary of some really terrible luck. And so, I think it's sort of both, but anyway, so those teams are sort of bad. Maybe just to wrap up for the last, five or so minutes here, maybe let's look at some of the more noteworthy games tonight, or this week. Tonight, Washington State kicks off their season tonight against Gonzaga. That's on ESPN, so you all can catch that one. WSU going up the road to Old Spokane, up to the McCarthy Athletic Center up there for the 9 p.m. Pacific tip off to start ESPN's 24 hours of college basketball.
Right, that'll be exciting.
Yes, and so midnight Eastern time. If you happen to be listening to this and you're on the East Coast. Midnight Eastern time, that'll tip off. That's a game that frankly I don't really expect the Cougars to win, but could be interesting in terms of, I know people sort of like Gonzaga as the sort of Cinderella darlings of the world, and so it could be interesting that way. If you're watching that game tonight, one thing to really watch out for is how Washington State does or does not handle Gonzaga's big men, Elias Harris and Robert Sacre. They did good job.
Who are like 30 years old?
Yes,
you look at them and you're like, these guys should. You would, like, if you saw them in a senior men's rec league, you wouldn't be like completely shocked. They're big and they're just, anyway.
Yes.
So that'll be a good game.
Yep. So Harris destroyed them inside 2 years ago up in Spokane. He had problems last year with his explosiveness after a knee injury. So they the Cougs are just incredibly thin up front. So, if Gonzaga is able to destroy them inside, which I anticipate they probably will be, Cougs will probably zone the crap out of them and try to just swarm if they get it into the post to try and swarm that guy. So I don't know. That'll be interesting. Other interesting games this week. I don't know, Seth, anything sort of catch your fancy?
Yeah. I mean, Arizona at St. John's, that's Thursday. That's on ESPN 2, 6:30. The human interest angle from that story will be that Kevin Parham from Arizona, who in the offseason had a kind of a rough offseason, he got shot twice. Well, it's one shooting, two bullets, while he was visiting his mom in the Bronx, who was sick, and his mom a month ago passed away. So he's going back to New York, and so that is sort of is the little human interest angle, but it should be, you know, two kind of growing teams that are kind of growing programs, rebuilding. That should be a pretty fun game to watch. And then I guess Arizona's going to play. That's a tournament, so they'll play somebody good, presumably, no matter what happens in that game on Friday. But the time is TBD. I don't know exactly who they could end up playing, but that, as far as like, you know, decent, Oregon State is going to be in at some sort of tournament in the Meadowlands, and they'll play Texas on Saturday at 6. That doesn't look like that's on TV, although I find that hard to believe. It must be on somewhere. So those are kind of two sort of marginally interesting games. And then next week, UCLA is going to play in that Maui Invitational. So we'll talk about that next week, but that's going to be a pretty big test for them. But yeah, those are two games, that St. John's game on Thursday. And then I guess Arizona's playing somebody big on Friday. I don't know who though. They're also in some sort of tournament thing.
Yeah. Arizona will play if they, depending on how they do against St. John's, they'll play either Mississippi State or Texas A&M. And so Texas A&M, that could be an interesting game. Mississippi State's not that good, although it'd be interesting just to see if Renardo Sidney would just get mad and punch somebody in the face. No, I'm kidding. That's not fair. That's not fair. And you certainly leave him alone. There's that Oregon State, Texas game to me is interesting in the sense that, it is, by the way, it's a neutral site game. It's in New Jersey. So that'll be interesting. And then just beyond that, I don't know. It's like we just got done talking about how Oregon State sort of needs to show something, and that is a prime opportunity to show something against a pretty good team. And I think another game that's sort of a show me game is New Mexico at Arizona State. New Mexico is a good team. You know, that's a team that is probably the preseason favorite to win the Mountain West. They've got a lot of talent coming back, including I'm totally drawing a blank on his name at this very second, but the returning sort of Mountain West freshman of the year. They've got talent. They've got a lot of talent. And so if Arizona State really, you know, wants to sort of show that they have pulled out of last season's malaise, you know, that would be probably a pretty good game to do it. Other than that, there's not, you know, interestingly enough, there's really not a whole heck of a lot going on that's interesting. Alabama at Colorado, that could be a bloodbath. USC at San Diego State.
Don't watch that.
USC at San Diego State could have been interesting, but all the good players left.
For both teams, yeah.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm just kind of like, I don't know. There's not much else. There is Austin Peay at California, which means we can all sit at our television and yell, "Let's go pee," which is always sort of a fun thing to do. So I don't know. That could be interesting. That one is on ESPN2. So if you want to get a good look at Alan Crabb, the possible Pac-12 Player of the Year this year, that might be that's on Tuesday. That might be an interesting game. But other than that, sort of a light schedule.
Yeah, it's a light schedule. And, you know, one thing, if you do want to, you know, check out some of these teams just for fun or whatever, if you have this ESPN3 deal, if it comes with your cable or whatever, I don't know how it works exactly, but if you have that, all these games are archived. All the ones on ESPN are archived, so you can always check them out and watch a half or something while you're bored. If you don't have anybody who can see your computer at work, you can do it that way. So I would check that out as well.
Yeah, that's excellent advice, especially if you are if you're old and don't want to stay up to watch like say Wazoo Gonzaga tonight or
right whatever. There you go. So,
anyway, all right, cool. Well, I think that will do it for our first episode, Seth. Not bad.
Mm-hmm. I think pretty okay. I only said Pac-10 twice that I can remember, so that's good.
Yeah, so that's always a bonus. So we will try to be better next week. I think that'll be our goal, right? We'll try to eliminate all Pac-12.
We're going to try to get better. Yes, exactly. Just like every Pac-12 team, Pac-12, we're going to try to get better every week.
That's right.
And then really be in a zone come tournament time.
There we go. All right. Well, so for my co-host, Seth Colon, my name is Jeff Neuser. Once again, you can find his work at thesunbreak.com. You can find my work at CougCenter.com, CougarSportsWeekly.com, and College Basketball Prospectus 2011-2012. Go buy the book. And that'll do it for this week. Thanks for joining us. We will talk to you next week.